Okay, I'd like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Grant Regional Water. It is April 16th, 2026 at 6 o'clock. Do we have any public input tonight?
No.
Okay, great. And do we need to go into executive session?
We do not.
Excellent. Okay, so then we are on the consent agenda. I understand we have to reapprove the February 19th minutes, and then we also have the March 19th minutes. Does anyone have any additional changes to either of the meeting agendas for the minutes?
And just clarification on the February 19th minutes, we had previously approved them showing Corey as present, but Corey was absent. That's the only change and the reason for the reapproval.
Corey shook his head.
Okay. And then does anyone have any questions on the March check register? I have a couple. On Ryan's credit card, it looked like he had three Summit County building permits. Did he really have three? Or
it's every time they have to cut the road for repair, he has to get a permit.
Okay.
So that's right.
So we did have three different charges. And then there was something called break room ads. Was that just break room additions for 1895?
To CCG? Yeah, we ordered a few more stools and chairs and table just to so Barnes
okay.
could sit in there.
And then there was something for $3,880 from HSI Workplace Compliance that was just SDS.
So we're switching from your safety data sheets that have to have all the chemicals and the respond. We're switching to those all being electronic.
Okay.
And so they're helping us do that with this QR codes and things like that.
And then I also had a question. So on the purchase order for Corolla, what out-of-scope design elements are we requesting?
So at 60%, Corolla had designed a chemical building that did not meet promontory specs. So we asked them, felt they didn't do their homework. And so we are splitting the cost on that. The dollar amount really is within Steve and my approval authority, but because of it's part of a $3 million PO from over a year ago, we want to bring it to the board. $100,000 also will give us some latitude in case there's any other change orders between now and 90% design, so we don't have to come back every time there's a change order. So that's what the request is for that purchase order.
So the promontory standards, are they design guidelines or?
So they, the height of the roof, they exceeded the height. That was one thing. And we're actually having them shrink the space as well based on feedback from our February meeting.
Okay. Did anyone else have any questions on the consent agenda?
Aaron, I had a question on the seat covers. It was $1,200 for seat covers.
Yeah, that was one of the new big trucks we got, an F-350, and it's seat covers for the front, the bench, the head covers, just so, because the guys who get in and out of that truck are often quite muddy and dirty, so it just really protects the truck for when we go to trade it or sell it in a few years.
I get the purpose of seat covers, but $1,200, and then we spend another $3,000 on toolboxes.
No, that when I saw that, I did look into it a little bit more because it caught my eye too, Mike. But yeah, that's I'm not sure exactly what how fancy they were to buy to put in there. The toolboxes often run that much because they're steel and mounted on the bed and things like that. But I'll agree, the seat cover surprised me a little bit. I don't know if you know anything more about the brand.
Another $40,000 for a bed crane almost?
Yeah, that was the bed and the crane. It was everything to go on the back of the truck. So it wasn't just the bed. It was the crane that got mounted on it on the new truck.
Right. Do we include all of that when we do a budget for a truck?
Yeah, that was all part of the capital budget, and we knew that was going to be part of it when we decided to replace the crane truck.
Yeah, I guess it goes kind of back to my comment last month about, you know, looking for ways we can watch our expenses. And Karen caught a couple of the other ones I was wondering about. What was the $165,000 to H2O Innovations?
That's the final payment for the design submittals for the membrane supplier for the treatment plant.
Membranes.
Okay. And that was the purchase order we approved last month.
It was $275,000 total.
Total. And that we approved actually back in like the 7th.
So we received all the design submittals to get us to the 90% design. And we were invoiced for the final payment.
And then there was some WIFIA loan closing to Zions and LC George, and then the bond council, Dilmer and Bell, that was $85,000.
Yeah. The $20,000 to Zions was actually a negotiated decrease from what they would normally charge on something like that. And the Gilmore Bell is typical. It's just usually it doesn't stand out because we pay those out of proceeds of the loan. But since we're not drawing down on this loan, we cut them a check for it. So it does stand out a little bit more. But I think we were all very comfortable with, again, I think they were trying to help us out a little bit. I think we would normally pay closer to a $90,000 or $100,000 to Gilmore Bell for a bond like that.
And the last one I had was there was maybe 5 entries to Stephen Jackson Owens right at the very end.
On the check register?
There we go. I think so.
Oh, right there.
It's a refund of an impact fee. Sorry, it took me a minute. So the $2,900 is what he paid for his meter and a security deposit and then his impact fee. And he jumped through all the hoops, turned in all the paperwork, and stopped construction and abandoned his building permit. So we refunded his impact fee, but so he'd have to come back to us if they ever decide to build again.
Okay. And then do you take those out of the count of the permits?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I have.
Yep.
Yeah, it gets
removed. Thank you.
Good questions, Mike. Thank you.
There was the Wright building. That was just a half payment for that.
Yeah, they're the ones who are down at Lost Canyon, where we're putting a big garage on the retaining wall. That was to get them going on to work on that.
It looked to be exactly half.
Yeah.
I figured as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ian's on and off. He's trying.
Okay. Does he have any questions on that? Ian, do you have any questions on the check register or the purchase order?
Oh, he's running up. He's down in Boulder, Utah, running off his hotspot with low bars, Lodge's Wi-Fi in name only, but no viable internet.
He's currently off. Oh, Ian, respond. Not at this time, actually.
Okay. Well, we're going to put you to work today. How do we do this? I guess we need to.
Yeah,
what
did I
consent? So, would anyone like to make a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second. Okay. All in favor?
So we're saying Mike.
Is that Mike or Corey?
Corey.
Hi, that's Mike.
Corey and Bill tied.
we want to do this.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Steve, tell us about March.
Okay, so so first, looking at revenue, we're almost exactly on budget for revenue through the first quarter. We didn't get there how you would have expected, but that's where we are. We're under on expenses, which is good, a couple $100,000 so far through March. We do have some well and other repairs coming in April, so we may lose a little ground there, but I think we'll hold pretty close. So if we go down a little bit to revenue, this is why I say we're there, but it's not how I would have thought we would be there. So water sales are under budget because just lack of people in town, usage isn't what we thought it would be. So those are under. But other revenue, which is interest earnings and inspection fees, is actually up. Interest earnings because they still haven't really done a lot with interest rates, so we're still making pretty good money on our balances. And inspection fees, we have had some new developments come in where they pay 3% of whatever infrastructure as an inspection fee. And so that's helped us stay on budget through March. So good news, we're on budget for revenue, but kind of a little bit backwards way of getting there, let's say. So, and then expenses, it's pretty balanced between operations and non-operations right now. The 8.7 seems like a big increase, but a lot of that is depreciation. Again, if we back out the depreciation increase, it's about a 5.5%, I think 5.85 is what I have in there. So still running below budget and kind of what we would have expected for the first quarter. If we go down a little bit more, so cash, last month, as you may recall, cash stayed, actually went up a little bit. This month we did go down because we made our final payment to Oakland of the $517,000, something like that. And then a couple of checks you pointed out, we paid Gilmore Bell, we paid Zions, we paid H2O. So just had some bigger checks going out, but still in good shape there. Still at 288 days of operating reserves on hand, which is still better than last year. So if we go down to customer growth, this was a little bit, so January was low, February we made a comeback, and actually got ahead of budget a little bit on impact fees. We dropped right below budget again during March because there were only 5 new connection requests and only $26,000 of impact fees. So for the year right now, you can see we've only have 16 new connections. You guys follow me, but so we only have 16, and you can see before we've had quite a bit more. Even in 2023, we had 23. A couple of them have been bigger, so we're at 102,000. And if you look over here, Promontory sold 6 lots in that first quarter. Their previous low was at 5 in 2023. So struggling a little bit on new customers coming on. In April, we have already received one impact fee for about $180,000, though, which will keep us above budget for a couple of months because over an old ranch, somebody is building a big house with a lot of irrigated space. So you'll see that we'll be back above after the end of April. But yeah, March was interesting in that there wasn't a whole lot of activity again on growth. All right, let's go down a little bit. So kind of talking about usage. So this year for March, we were at 78 acre feet. Last year was 81. This year we're at 229 for own customers through March. Last year we were 236. So you would have expected growth by just customer growth, but there isn't even that, and it's down from that. The other interesting number to look at is since we're not sending any water to Summit Water, we've only handled, let's say, 700 acre feet so far this year. You know, 390 to Park City, what we send down to the ponds, some of it for our benefit. But Promontory actually did use water on their courses in March, which they haven't done while I've been here. So that was kind of new. And Olympic Park and us. So but if you look at, like, back in 2023, between what we were having to send to Summit Water, Park City was taking a lot back then. So at least we're getting that little bit of a reprieve as we were doing a lot of repairs, but it's just kind of an interesting to see how the system's kind of changed over the last few years. All right, let's go down a little bit more.
So you said Promontory started using some irrigation water?
They did.
How does that align with our goal of holding off until what, May? What did we ask for?
June.
We've asked for June 1st.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to answer that?
So Promontory approached us. They were concerned about the hot, dry winter, that if they didn't start hand watering or putting some water on their greens, that they would lose those. Promontory has, you know, a couple thousand acre feet. As part of an accommodation to them, we told them that they could hand water, but not to use their irrigation. So we're working with them. Brian's in constant contact with the Promontory crew on a regular basis. And so, yeah, it does not meet our conservation messaging, but as an accommodation to one of our largest customers, we're allowing them to do it on a limited basis.
Yeah, we just don't want to set up precedent, I don't think, of, sounds like, that there was some justification, I guess. Okay, that's all I had.
Short course or struggle?
This was not on the short course.
Is hand watering literally hand watering, or did they put out like a temporary sprinkler, or?
A hose.
I think they just hooked up to some of the irrigation boxes and let them just handle the hose. Gotcha. A couple of courses had some repairs and stuff like that, so they didn't want stuff to die.
Okay, the next slide down is just the graph. And for next month, I'm going to add a line to show what budget will be. So you kind of see basically budget will follow between the purple line, which was last year, which was crazy, and 2024, which was kind of, we thought, crazy until we had 2025. But the budget will kind of fall between those two lines. In March, we were just a little bit above last year. We should have been a little bit more than that. The next one down kind of shows the breakdown in March of where there were overages and unders. Again, residential was under. You'll see the golf course down here was over because usually there's only the budget for their base fee, but they actually used a little bit of water. That's that $5,900. So we were a little budget over there. So for the month, we were about $45,000 under on water, but again, made up through impact fees and inspection fees and things like that. So, yeah, I'm not used to being right on budget, on revenue. So we'll see how that plays out during the summer.
I know you were $4,000.
Yeah. So I should be happy, but it makes me nervous too for some
reason. So let me just make one comment about the expenses. The Atkinson well went down last August. We had to have the pump and motor pulled. And you never know what you're going to get when you go through that process. We realized or found out that at the bottom of the well was a 2-inch piece of pipe that was just down there that we needed to extract. We hired Wittison to perform the work. That work ended up totaling $65,000 for brushing and baling and, you know, removing that piece of pipe. That should have been a purchase order approved by the board. We approved it as an emergency item. We're going to bring that to the board for ratification next month. So just so you know, the work has already happened. You're not going to see it for another month, but I just wanted to make you aware of that.
100 feet of sediment
too. On an audit update, I got the. There's only one adjusting journal entry from the auditors this year, and it was how we're handling the EAM software that we purchased and implemented last year. I capitalized it. They wanted to capitalize what we paid for implementation and our subscription annual amount for the next 3 years and set up a liability for what we hadn't paid and start to amortize it a little differently. So not a big change, but just a little bit on how we're handling that asset. So we're full on making tables and we're working on the write-up and stuff like that. And they have a pit. They know the schedule to get it to our audit committee in time to have you guys have a look at it. But I was really happy with just the second year is always a lot easier. And I think we're only going to have the one adjusting geometry. So I'm happy about that. And I think that's it for me, unless there's any questions.
And Jess, I just have to say that every time I get a Jess report, I'm like, wow, this is going to be interesting. And this was no difference.
Well, thank you. It's a team effort. All three of us in the engineering department. So every year, Mountain Regional.
Did you guys hear Jess?
No.
Where am I speaking that way?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Much better.
Okay. Not much better?
Very much better.
Very much better. Okay, well, we'll speak up. And, so, yeah, I guess a little overview is, as you know, every year we go through a concurrency review, and we look at, specifically, we've been asked in the past to look at water quality data throughout our groundwater wells, water quality and quantity to see, are we operating the wells at a sustainable rate? What's happening to the water level as we run them hard in the summer or rest them in the winter? And then what is going on with TDS? Because we've picked up in recent years that it can be an issue, especially for certain wells. But yeah, that's just an overview of that. Specifically for the most recent concurrency review, if you're looking at the water year 2025, so October of 2024 through September of 2025, we were all here as a drought year for Utah, and with less precipitation, higher temps, and growth within the district, it's no surprise that we had increased usage and increased demand. So between the increased demand and we've had issues with the wells in the past year, we couldn't operate a lot of the wells at lower capacities. We had to push them hard to keep up with our demand. Yeah. That's just a summary of what went down. Now, specifically, we've been asked to pay attention to 5 wells and their water quality, which I've listed in this report here. And I'm not going to go through the graphs for each of those wells, but you can if you desire. Atkinson, Silver Creek, Gorgoza, Jailhouse, and Blackhawk. And what I've done with the help of Sam is since 2019, we've started looking at how much have we used these wells, like total volume. And then that helps supplement the water quality data, like static water level when we're not using the well and dynamic water level when we are using the well. So as you can see, since 2019, specifically I'll start with Atkinson well 2 in the blue, dark blue here. We were running it pretty hard in 2019 with almost 45 million gallons throughout the year. And we tried to really curtail that between 2020 and 2023. But with increased demand and issues with other wells, Atkinson, at least until recently, was more reliable, and we had to run it pretty hard. So in 2025, you can see we've returned to almost 2019 levels, so almost 45 million gallons. And that is mostly just to keep up with demand. It wasn't like we wanted to run the well hard. Other wells you can see less dramatic. With Silver Creek, kind of consistent. Jailhouse, Gorgoza is kind of all around or all over the place. But these are just showing how hard have we run these wells over the past few years. So what does this mean? The reason why we're looking at this is, okay, when we're running Atkinson hard in 2019 and then we don't use it as much, and then we're using it hard again, what has that done to the water levels? What has that done to the water quality? And so for Atkinson in particular, you can see that in 2019, we were pushing it really hard. Blue dots is when we're not using the well, what is the water level at? And gray dots represent when we are using the well, what does it drop to below the ground surface? The top of this graph, if you look on the right-hand side, the feet below ground surface, so think of zero, that's the ground level, and then hundreds of feet below ground. So hopefully that provides reference. Blue dots, well is resting, gray dots, it will drop down. So you can see that in 2019 and 2020, we were seeing the lowest groundwater levels that we've seen from Atkinson. It wasn't recovering. These blue dots stayed pretty low even after not using the well. And that was concerning. So after 2019, we were trying to use the well less. You can see that the static groundwater levels are recovering in that time, which is pretty cool. However, in recent years, specifically in 2024, we had some issues with collecting data in the past year, so we don't have 2025 data. But you can see that in the past couple of years, we've had to push the well hard, and we're seeing those static groundwater levels drop again. So a little unfortunate, but very predictable. On the water quality side, you can look at these yellow dots, which show total dissolved solids, or TDS, content in milligrams per liter, or mg per L. And what's interesting here is we've shown, or I've explained to you, that we've very intentionally changed operations in Atkinson well, and that has not, at least in the overall trend, impacted TDS. TDS continues to increase despite changes in operations, and that helps us believe that it might not be operations that are impacting water quality. It could be external factors. And I believe maybe we've talked about before that Mountain Regional paid Bill Laughlin to do a groundwater study of what kind of TDS, what kind of contributing factors could be it. And that study indicated that there was a potential that road salt might have been the leading factor, which obviously doesn't matter with how you operate the well if it's road salt impacting it. But these past few years of data kind of indicate that operational changes aren't having an impact on water quality, which is good and bad. I guess good because it's not something that we're contributing to, but bad because it's not something we can potentially have more of an impact on fixing. Atkinson has pretty concerning levels of total dissolved solids, and unfortunately the trend is showing that it's climbing, so it's on our radar, and we're continuing to work through ways to address it going forward.
Do we have a goal or target?
Yeah. Water level. I would say.
This is practical, or is there no hard number or anything?
I just don't think we want to drive the well to historic lows, for sure. That's is where I'm at right now, and I think that's as good as we can do.
Gotcha.
For source portfolio and options we have.
I will say this one blue point in 2026. Was the result of a well video, because like I mentioned, we had those issues gathering data electronically. So the fact that in early 2026, it was pretty close to historic lows is concerning going into the summer. But I guess we'll...
That kind of makes sense, because you had to run harder in 2025.
Yeah, in 2025. And were we running out of the money?
Where the TDS kind of looks like an anomaly in like 2020, that one. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on why that was just happened to be that way?
Yeah, I think it's just noise. We were curious if operations would prompt this change, but then it's in 2025 it bounces right closer back to the trend line. So it's inconclusive, but probably not. Yeah. Still, though. Oh, no, I was going to say this One part of the graph that I didn't quite elaborate on is these two, top line red and bottom line orange, is not where you want TDS to sit because the EPA secondary maximum contaminant level, is 500 milligrams per liter, and then the state has a 2,000 milligrams per liter. So it starts to impact the taste as it gets more.
Yeah. So in Utah, those limits are implemented essentially if a secondary standard is not enforceable or health based. So it's aesthetic or taste based, like Jess mentioned. So if you had 1,000 parts in the state of Utah, they'll require you to make a blending plan, which we have for the well. So you have to blend it with other sources to get under 1,000. And you have to show you don't have another viable source you can send to those, which we have done. If we have 2,000 parts, the big scary red line, we'll lose the well. And we won't be able to.
Yeah.
Is there any treatment protocols that we can put in place at the well that are not a treatment plant?
Yeah, no, it's all falls in the treatment plant category. It's dissolved solids, chlorides, sulfates, you know, small insoluble particles that they require like a membrane process, a sophisticated one. So nothing practical, like point of use treatment, or nothing easy.
This is also a shared source that we have with High Valley Water.
Yeah. Is there any messaging that we can put out there to Summit County and UDOT about the overuse of salts or anything like that that is meaningful in any way?
Excuse me. That's an excellent point. And we have had some meetings with Park City folks and talked with Summit County staff. York City, within their city boundary, has established some rates of discharge of the brine solution. And we've passed those along with our partners, but ultimately, honestly, I don't know if it's realistic. It's worth trying, which we will. But I don't know if it's realistic for us to get a reduction in application rate of brine for someone like the Utah Department of Transportation, with the freeway being and our source protection zones. So, yeah, I think maybe Summit County could be more receptive. Of course, the Park City folks upstream, we've already met with them, and they've been very receptive. And then salt storage sites are something else we've looked at. And the biggest salt storage site I'm aware of in the basin is at the UDOT facility just up the street. And in recent years, they've actually completely rebuilt and added containment to their brine ponds they use, which will hopefully have like a significant positive impact on the Silver Creek watershed, which is where all these wells are located that kind of have most, I'd say, aggressive trends. Do you agree with that,
Jeff? Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting, and we might not know in years, depending on how it filters through the soil and if it is, in fact, contributing as much as we might think it is. But it could be very interesting in the next 4 years or so to see how that works. And even like this past winter, as rough as it will be for like water, obviously a lot less salt was applied to those highways. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Right. Yeah. But to your point, if the theory holds up, it's a cumulative issue. It's not a, you know, salt on Monday affects us on Wednesday thing. It's a 30 years of salt on the roads is showing its head now.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Right. Yeah. It won't necessarily go down, but maybe it'll plateau.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it doesn't get us out of the woods. So yeah, I know Atkinson's not the best news, so I'll go to some of our other. Yeah.
Isn't this the well where we're doing that whole pilot program to put, good water down so it makes it better. Sorry, not to.
Sure. While we're doing all these repairs at Atkinson Well 2, we're also trying to implement a pilot study of an aquifer storage recharge. Is that the right? ASR. And the goal is to blend well water with treated water from Signal Hill treatment plant to hopefully allow the, not only would we be able to blend more effectively instead of at tank, but also it allows us to potentially pump this water during times when the plant isn't running as hard and the well isn't running as hard in the winter, that when it's then pushed really hard in the summer, it's not as, it's already like pre-blended. Maybe it'll impact water levels. It could, yeah, it's pilot study, so it's like hard to say exactly what will happen. That's the whole point, but that's a good point. We are implementing a solution that might help with blending and water level, but ultimately doesn't treat, just dilutes what is already there. Yeah. I thought, I won't be going through all these charts, but happy to answer questions if you guys have them. I wanted to focus on well 15B and 15C next, because those are some of our most important wells in the district. And these ones, I would say, are much better news. You can see that over the years, the water level has pretty much remained the same, which is great. Even as we've pushed it harder or not as hard, it seems to return to a given level, which is awesome. These are incredibly important sources. Well, 15C is similar, and so it's great to see some pretty stable static groundwater levels. TDS, in both instances, you can see a slight increasing trend, not nearly as dramatic as Atkinson Well 2. So it's something to be aware of, but I would say not concerned about. But yeah, overall, pretty good. And then the only other one that I wanted to talk about is just another example across the district. Let's hop over to Summit Park. This one's interesting because you can see a difference in how we've really changed operations in 2020, and that drastically impacted where the groundwater levels were. But then unfortunately, these ground levels are starting to return to historic lows because of just the operational, the need to run it hard in the past few years. But this is a very interesting case study that it shows you very clearly that if you change how hard you're pushing the well, it very, very much affects the groundwater level. But despite all that, no crazy changes in water quality. It is slightly increasing trend in TDS, but very, very minimal.
Freeways and source protection.
No freeways. Be very interesting if they put freeways there. Yeah. But basically, these charts all have similar things. So
how did we affect it so dramatically with operational changes? Like, what did we just stop running it at certain times, or like what kind of operational changes can make that bigger difference?
Peaking wells, we just kind of run them the same time.
Okay.
So I've changed.
So you let them recharge most of the year, yeah. And then you just use them when you need it.
That's the big jump over the last few years. Just kind of give them less well.
Okay. Would you say you influence the flow at all, too?
Yeah, I try to keep the flows low. But it's, you know, if you have a hot, dry summer, the demand is like you have to turn them up. So, but I try not to. Yeah, Brian scaled back significantly to enjoy the flow rates and volume. We see issues with and reprioritize where they kick on and skate up, which is right. We like, but it's kind of like three changes. Yeah. Volume digging up, where they come in priority, speed, or velocity, flow rate, however you want to think about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of them are really dramatic.
Yeah.
See, especially the bedrock aquifers. Thanks, Jess.
Yeah, I guess that's my summary. I mean, Kraken's kind of bad news, 15B, good news, 12.7, good and bad. Getting to balance it out.
Yeah. Hey, it's Mike. I had a couple of comments if I put my engineering hat on and, you know, maybe a figure would help the reader understand where the wells are located a little bit. And then maybe, have you thought about when you describe Summit Park well, for example, if you could identify maybe the formation it's in and see if there's any, you know, correlation there?
That's a good point. I don't know the geology off the top of my head for each of these wells, but that would be very easy to track down and add to the.
Yeah, we have a. That's a great comment, Mike. Yeah, we have a figure. One could.
Might help.
Wells and there's source protection zones.
You can kind of see how different they are in depth. They're on the right, I guess.
Yeah. And then as far as water bearing formations go, I think the only real water bearing formation that's potentially contributing to the TDS trends is that also at Atkinson Well, too. There are some sulfates native to the aquifer. So we've seen both sulfates and chlorides increase there. But the rest are fairly consistent with contributors to the TDS group. But the figure, at the very least, yeah, that's a great comment. Thanks.
Would be, yeah, good context just to have on that.
Thanks.
Great report, guys. Okay, Steve and Lisa, tell us about the district draft response plan's changes.
This is the month that we adopt our drought response level for the year, for the summer irrigation season. And we have originally, just a quick background, we adopted this plan back in 2021. We revised it in 2022, moving from 5 to 6 levels in the plan. But since then, we have not made any updates to the plan. It's remained relatively stable, and we've had some obviously some good winters, and we didn't need to revisit the drought plan again. This year, we need to do that again. So what the plan needed in light of not having and done any updates in 4 years is really just surrounding, not methodology or changing any of the ways that we are using the calculations or the methodology behind those calculations, but rather just updating our usage data and rate table to make them more in line with what our current rates are. So as you noticed, the red lines, again, really primarily relate to those revised tables 2 through 4 and Appendix A and Appendix B. And Steve did the heavy lifting on those tables with our usage data and rate modeling. So I'll turn it over to him for those.
It'd be easiest to just kind of go towards, go to the end, I think, and like the last three pages. Let's start on the third page. One more before this one. Yeah, sorry. So updated based off of what usage has been for 24 and 25. Probably the biggest change is most of these numbers went up a little bit, but a lot because our outdoor watering over the last 2 years, if you take a baseline of how much we use in the winter, assume that's the baseline of indoor usage, and then just look at the usage above that, we've skewed to more of a 60% of our usage has been outside and only 40%. So when you talk about a reduction target of 20% of outdoor, that made that number grow a little bit. And so then you take that, you take that doubles to 40%, 60%, and then you add the 10%. So that's how much each customer would be requested to save under the different scenarios.
And that's per year?
That's per year.
What's the 10% you add?
Indoor usage.
In levels 4 and 5.
In levels 4, 5, and then in 6,
okay.
Basically there'd be no outdoor watering because 95%, and we'd ask them to cut 25% of indoor. What that effectively does is cut their water usage in more than half. If they're not using any, hardly 5% outdoor and 25% indoor, we'd all feel that. So updated that table to kind of based off usage over the last couple of years. And then if you go down to the next table, just kind of updated. So as you recall, at level 3, this is where we're asking for a 20% reduction. We would cover that reduction through 20% of expense mitigation, expense cuts on our part, and 80% through the drought reserve, which we set up and has been just earning interest. We've been paying landscape incentives, but there's still a nice balance, $900,000, let's say, at least right now. So, and then as we go down the tiers, because the impact would become more revenue-wise, we have to start to recover some. If we go to level 4 through drought surcharges, we still would do expense reduction, but it's a smaller percentage of everything, and how much the drought reserve would cover becomes less. So that's kind of percentages. This is what it
means. Why is the level 6? Why does it go back up to 20% there?
It's just kind of a math game based on looking at the next one down. So at a level 3, so if everybody really saved 20% of their outdoor watering this summer, we'd see about $1 million impact to our financials. So we'd try to cover that through about $200,000 of expense reduction and the rest with the drought reserves. Reality is without a financial punishment, we will not get a 20% reduction in outdoor usage. Even with messaging, the only thing that really moves the needle from what we've experienced is once you start hitting the pocketbook. But that, if they did cut that, that'd be the impact. If we went 40% outdoor and 10% indoor, the financial impact would be the 1.9, 2.9, and 4.7. So it's kind of doing the math of how do we get there? How do we cover that loss? And so it becomes more of a responsibility of drought surcharges and expense reductions. Now, some of those expense reductions would come just naturally through, if we weren't moving much water, our power would be less, we'd have less chemical, all of those kind of things. But let's just hope we never get to level 6.
So if we cut our expenses at level 3 by 20, and then we cut them 15% more, and then 15% more, and then 20% more at the end. Is that what that's trying to say?
Yeah, or how much of the revenue is recovered? And let me look at those a little bit, because, yeah.
And kind of the same thing on the drought reserves. If we spend 80% of it in level 3, and then we spend 35% of what's left of that, and then...
Yeah, we start to recover more through drought surcharges in level 4, but if you look at the bottom one, you'll see, so the 80% is of the $1 million, so almost 792. The 35% is actually a smaller amount of the drought reserves we're using, but it's a much smaller percentage because now we're picking up more of the percentage savings through or recovery through the drought surcharges.
I think when you get to Mike's question, when you get to the 20% number at level 6, we have a dollar amount in the drought reserve, and that's right, that $900,000 that Steve said. So we don't have more than 20% at that level to give up.
Yeah.
That's why it's 20.
So that's why it stops there. If you go down one more, and right now we're only at level 3, so we're not asking to implement. This is just a table of where our money's been coming from. So if you average out 24 and 25, the information on the first three columns are all the same. So you have 6.7 million from base, 6.4 million from usage. the rates on the right, on the left are kind of all of our different rates we actually charge to different customers. So over those 2 years, we've averaged about $13 million in water. So if you take 20% of the outdoor usage, you start to lose some of that most expensive water first. So that's why you have the $900,000 impact. Then the others are just kind of percentages of that. So you can see where a 20% outdoor cut would come. We'd residential customers, we'd lose about $500,000. Commercial, we use 122, and then just as it kind of tears down. Park City and raw water don't move a lot because their rates are much lower, and we don't change their rates based off of tiers or anything. They're more of a set based on contracts and prices and things like that. So that's the 20%. The next one down is the 40% and 10%, where you'd see the loss would be about 1.9. Go down a little. I'm sorry. So I just, all of this was just kind of updating for the magnitude. Back in 2022, when we did that, the base was more like 4 million and usage was about 3.5 million. So you can see our revenue's grown a lot. So the magnitude of every, it's still the same, just the magnitude of everything's a little bigger now because we generate more money now. Let's go ahead and go down to the rates.
I guess what I think would be helpful in these charts is, you know, we're looking at the dollar impact, but I think it would be interesting to know what that equates to in gallons saved, right?
Okay.
If we ask, you know,
I think in the first table we're asking, it's like 1,200, like the 20% reduction.
The 1,200 a minute be times, you know, 5,000 residential customers. No, I actually have that. I just didn't create a table to put in here because I have to have that to calculate how much we lose.
Yeah, I just feel like maybe we're going to see that, you know, the residential reduction would cost us more in revenue than asking maybe an irrigation customer or you know, somebody else to reduce their use. And then we could free up more water for, you know.
Yeah, that could be a
maybe a better message too, saying we need to cut 10 million gallons.
Right. Well, I don't know. I follow this a lot. I mean, you know, even on the news, you know, people are calling in saying, why do I have to wait until May 15th to turn on my irrigation when the city is watering or the county is watering? And, you know, the Utah Department of Water posted on their Facebook page, like, hey, we're asking everybody to reduce 20%. It was just this barrage of people like, why me? And why are we watering alfalfa? And, you know, I just feel like we should really understand where all of it's coming from so that when somebody says, well, why is Summit County watering their lush lawns, you know, we can, or the schools or anything else, we can at least understand how that's affecting the whole picture.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely work on some of that going forward. Because I know when it happened before, every month in the newsletter, we'd send out, hey, you know, we've saved, or I think it was at the end of the year, we saved 70 million gallons, if I remember right, through our conservation messaging and things like that. But kind of the split of, hey, half of that was from homes and half of it was from commercial properties or whatever would be a good message too, right? So everybody sees that they're sharing in the pain, I guess.
Right. Yeah, Karen, I think that's a really good idea. So there's some metrics just so they can see if they're making a difference. You know, are we hitting our goal?
In our drought plan at the different levels, depending on where we are, we do say that we have a drought dashboard, if you will, that kind of shows how many gallons we've saved. And we did do that last year. We messaged on our bills and on our website and in our newsletter how many gallons.
Right. That's feedback. Were these appendix B in the previous drought plan?
Yes. These are all just updates, nothing new. It was just updating what was originally in the plan.
So the appendix B shows what?
What?
Have we thought about if they need to be in there?
I think we do in order to be able to, at level 4, 5, or 6, adopt those rates. We would have to hold a public hearing and notice customers, but I think we need that information in an appendix in order to present that to our customers.
Okay.
And if we ever got to that, we'd make a formal rate sheet as well, too, based off of this. But this is so you guys can know what you'd be asking to approve. So, again, at level 3, we don't change any rates. At level 4, we don't touch any water under 30,000 gallons per billing unit. But then we start to hit what we would consider has to, if you're using more than 30,000 gallons, you're watering a lot outside. So we start to hit that pretty aggressively. And then level 5, we have to start to get into some of that indoor because we're being asked to cut indoor and more. And then at the bottom, you'll see the drought surcharge per ERC. We've thought through this on the bill message. Instead of just increasing that indoor water, people would say, well, this is the water I need to live on. We think it'd be a better message to have, this is the surcharge everybody has to pay just because we're in a tough, everybody's in a tough spot. So that's the residential rates, that top box. The next one down is commercial. And again, so yellow highlights where we would be changing rates. And you can see the commercial isn't, we've actually pushed a little more towards commercial in this model than before. Commercial's always had a little bit of a benefit of some lower rates in their higher tiers, but if we were in drought, we don't think they should really be benefiting from that. So you can see that they'd be paying $100 per 1,000 gallons over tier 7 too. The next one down is our high elevation pumping surcharge. And we don't touch that even through level 4, because this is really a cost recovery system. But in level 5, we know there would be some inefficiencies in our system. When you're pumping small amounts of water up big hills, it just isn't very efficient for power. So that's when we kick in increasing those a little bit as well. Over on the right, our other, that bottom one is the fire hydrant water. What we discovered is some people kind of tried to outsmart the system before, because they could rent a fire hydrant meter, pay $18, and it's cheaper than paying the tiers, even with renting the meter. So if we go to level 4, we take that advantage away from renting a fire hydrant meter to fill your pool or whatever you want to do. And then the common wall, that's just basically irrigation for residential homes, so it follows that exactly. And the one above there is culinary. There's only a few connections like this where they're clearly only for irrigation and they're culinary, so they're more aggressive because that's, again, where we would really want to be cutting it off. So so all these changes in yellow would create that money that you see in that middle column of how much we'd make up through these increased rates. The plan worked, and I've been working on that today a little bit for the audit. The plan worked really well in 2022. I would argue too well. We didn't have to use any drought reserves because basically when we put in drought rates, we hit revenue exactly, even though there was a lot less usage. So I thought it was a good model. Like I said, I kind of just increased the magnitude of everything, but you've got about the same number of customers as a percentage in all the different levels. So as they start to cut down, the trick is you do lose your most expensive water first, because as people start to cut, you're not losing the $2.30 water. You're losing the $63 water. Right. So the impact of that first cut is actually pretty severe. All right. But no, knock on wood, we met with Wee Racin just the other day. They're sticking to the 20%. And at 20%, we don't change rates. And we'll be okay. But if it gets higher than that, we will change rates, because that's the only way we can make sure we're financially stable.
And the reason we changed would be if Weber Basin changed.
Say that again, Mike.
Why would we change to a level?
Since most of our water is based on exchange contracts with Weber Basin, if they're seeing a degradation in the Weber River, we would have to fall in line. And the next time they're meeting as a board is...
They meet at the end of the month and, the end of every month. But I think Darren said they're going to be revisiting the reservoir levels and what they do, the calculations that they have in order to, you know, designate what drought level they're in. They're going to update those monthly and they'll let us know if they see anything changing.
Again, because we're keyed, that's what...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because basically if they do that, then they're asking us to do, to match what they're doing. And to answer the
asking or is it
watering? Not really.
Home Depot.
Home Depot.
I'm going to go talk to them right after this.
Is it an ask? Is it, would you, or is it a order?
Right now it's an ask. It's a recommendation to cut 20%, but if we get into the other levels, it's going to be mandatory, and we will use the technology that we have through Badger, and we'll start calling people that are using, you know, we're going to try to get people to go, if your address is an even address, water on even days, odd address on odd days, and we're going to start calling people out. Unless something dramatically changes in the weather pattern, that's the only, you know, we don't have a choice.
I think I got my question answered, but it's the basin's meeting every month, deciding we stay at the same level, go up or down or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we're about a month behind to react with the same, essentially the same plan.
Yeah. Okay.
But if they were going, yeah. If they were going to change something, we could still react in time to have rates in place by June 1st, which is when our drought plan says we would impact rates in the cycle.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, there's a bit of math, a bit of guesswork, but at least we have experienced once, so that I was able to learn from that and kind of see what people really did. So that helped a little bit with the numbers. So.
Okay. And, the only other thing I would just like, as I was reviewing section 10, you had a, had how like a 3% reduction here or equal to 20% reduction. I just didn't feel like I understood how that math worked.
Okay. Let's go to that.
Yeah. So it was in section 10. It was like at a 20% reduction, we had a 3% reduction, and then a 15%, you had a 9% reduction. Anyway, it was just...
In the chart or...
No, in the narrative. In the text, yeah.
Is it section 10 or page 10?
No, it was section 10. Yeah, we're in it. So okay. If you just go down a little bit more, Sam.
Oh, okay. I know what you're saying.
And then your sentences just don't work once you take the chart out either. But.
Oh, okay. Once.
I thought we had updated them based on our new charts.
So like the 16%, and this is kind of where,
Yeah, see, this is where the district would reduce cash expenses by 2% to cover 20% of the financial impact.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand how that worked.
I think we went through these, Steve, right?
Yeah.
Because you're looking at, like, it's anticipated to be 3% of annual revenue. So we were looking at not just in the drought space, but in our total annual revenue.
Okay.
Or our total expenses. 2%
for the whole year to cover
that.
Yeah.
Short so, period of time. Like, 2% in 2022 would have meant... You know, let's say $400,000.
Okay.
But 2% of our expenses now would mean $600,000 because our expenses grew. So that's why those numbers stayed pretty similar, even though the overall numbers were growing. But as a percentage of each piece, they kind of stay the same. So like the usage where it says 16 or 17%, that's because, that's how much usage generates.
Yeah.
It generated less than more now, but it's about the same percentage of the overall picture. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
That helps. I was just,
okay.
I kept going through that and I was like,
One of those vital checks is I was like, okay, these numbers shouldn't change much. And they didn't. So that was kind of like, okay, that means probably things is working right.
Okay,
all right.
Sorry.
Did you want us to add an appendix pairing with usage numbers? Or what kind of table are you looking
for? I don't know. Maybe it's even something that we just check on a monthly basis. I just want
to report back. Yeah, we can
see. Yeah, I just want to feel like, you know, we're
what are put some actual numbers to what we're saving.
Because there is a great report data I pull out of Cassell and put into a spreadsheet that gives me usage build in each tier, and I can show 24 May, 25 May, and 26 May, and we can see, oh yeah, we've lost this gallons here, and so I'll put something like that in for next month. And that's a good number for you kind of to get your head around. It was kind of when we were setting the rates for last year, how we talked about if we impact this one because there's a lot of gallons here, it makes a big difference. But if we impact this one, it doesn't because there's not as many gallons. And that becomes very evident as you start to look at
it. And you can see how many customers also reside in those, are using water in those really high tiers.
Yeah, there's 60 customers or 40 customers who actually pay that. The mm-hmm. biggest tier on the bill or whatever it is. I'll provide that during the summer. It'll be good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Then do we need to make any kind of recommendation on?
Well, we need to make a just an approval, an administrative control board approval for the updates to the district's drought response plan. And then we need a second approval for the drought level recommendation.
Okay. Two different. So, would anyone like to make a motion on an approval of the district's drought response plan?
Might be you, Phil.
You are?
I'll make that motion.
Yeah. Okay. Corey, do we have a second? Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Ian says aye.
Is that everybody? Okay. That's unanimous. Okay, so now we need to approve
the drought level recommendation 3 is what we're asking for right now.
Okay.
With the potential to go to 4 if we need it to.
Okay. Would anyone like to make a motion?
A motion that we accept the recommendation of level 3, the option of going to 4 if need be later.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, is that Ian?
That was Corey.
Oh, that's Corey. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ian also.
Mike in there?
I haven't heard the mic for a minute.
Yeah. Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Okay, now we're on to Andy.
I didn't realize Corey and Ian sounded so much alike until they're both remote.
Yeah.
And they kind of have...
Ian hasn't been speaking. He's been typing.
Oh, has he? Oh, so maybe I just don't... Okay. It's always Corey. It's always Corey. Okay.
Hearing echoes of me.
In your packet, I have included the consumer confidence report. We're waiting for approval from the state. Stacy does a good job annually. Currently, because of the population of the district, we only have to provide this once a year. Once we cross the 10,000 threshold, we'll have to provide this information twice a year. The report has seen revisions over the last couple of years, requiring it to be provided in both English and Spanish, going through the different EPA regulations, PFAS and everything. Like I say, Stacy, Jess, Sam, they do all the heavy lifting. For whatever reason, my picture ends up on that report. I'm trying to change that, but it's in there.
You're the prettiest.
I don't think so. Put your glasses back on. Anyway, that's in there for your information.
Andy, I had a question on page 4, the table there of all the names. Page 4 of your PDF. One, yeah, that one. What's the point of that?
Yeah, I'm not totally sure. Oh, yeah, without context, that could be confusing. Yeah, this we have to make an effort to deliver a CCR to every customer in the district, and a lot of customers don't receive bills. So,
Sam, I'm kind of having a hard time hearing you.
Sorry.
The hotel.
I'm not very loud.
Yeah.
We need to make an effort to provide a CCR to every customer in the district. Many customers do not receive bills, like if you live in an apartment building. So this is a list of places that we deliver hard copies or make an effort to get the CCR to the folks living there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so it's really the single billed address is the key on the left is what that is.
Correct.
Okay.
It's what?
Single billed address. So it'd be like a whole building with multiple occupants or something.
Yeah, for example, all these addresses are the workforce housing at the Canyons. Nobody there is seeing a water bill with a QR code to get a CCR.
Sure.
So we find a common space area to post a hard copy or information on how to obtain a report.
Makes sense.
And then we also have hard copies available at the office.
Online.
Online, social media. I guess that's the list.
Yeah.
And that's one of the check boxes in those pages above it.
Right. Yeah, it's part of the compliance with the CCR rule, the DDW.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, anything else, Andy?
No.
Okay, does anyone have any questions or comments on department updates? I just wanted to say in the engineering report, I liked that you added those charts and graphs on the year-to-date usage down at the bottom.
Yeah, not much. Same story, Steve said.
Oh.
But that'll be...
Long the semi and are telling the same story, we're okay.
Steve looked at the revenue. I guess we look at gallons through source meters. It's really low.
Do you guys know how that piece of pipe ended up in the bottom of the well?
I feel like Brian has a theory.
Well, they were pulling out the stuff that was in there, and we already had a ASR pipe that we put in years ago that we kind of forgot about, but we got to the last stick of pipe, and it basically broke off, with whistling all the way to the bottom. The 2-inch ASR pipe. We had a hard time fishing that out because the top part bent over to, you know, your diameter is not 2-inch, it would be like 6-inch because it was bent. And then we found out there's like 100 feet of silt down at the bottom we had to get out too.
Probably a good thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just like the more you dug into this thing, the more you found you needed to fix.
Anna, I have another question. It looks like in your report, do we still have over half of our people getting a paper billing?
Yep.
We do.
Surprised me too.
I know. I was surprised too.
And we really haven't had many people commenting about getting charged to receive a paper bill.
Mm-hmm. Charges of dollars? Or how much is it?
Starting, yeah. We're going to start.
Starting July will be dollars. Yeah.
Okay, so it hasn't started kicked in yet.
So I pulled the report in both places, in Cassell, where we can mark it, and then in Express as well. They were really, really close.
I feel like there was some discussion about just migrating people over to electronic if we had their email address. Was that, am I wrong?
Yeah, we can either just move everybody, or if you haven't opted out, you just automatically get charged.
Right. Is that how it went down, or we haven't done that?
It's not. It goes into effect July 1st, Corey.
But have we decided how we're going to do
it?
Oh,
I see. Okay.
Are we going to push everybody into it, or are they going to have to opt?
I thought we were pushing everyone, and they have to opt to receive paper. Instead of the other way.
I think that's what we should do.
Now the Postage has a 8% surcharge.
Yeah.
For the next little bit.
And then I already talked to Andy about this, but I had a neighbor who applied for the lawn exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted to officially ask if there was a way to get an exception to having to put in
35% of the plants with the irrigation. You know, he was thinking maybe he would put fewer plants back in. He's got this big lush green yard. I don't know where my dog's going to poop anymore, but he's got this lush green yard and he's doing a lot of updates. So he was going to take it out, but he was going to do something that was probably more, you know, mulch and fewer shrubs.
Yeah. He did talk to us about that. He explained it wasn't just our rules that we have to follow. It's also the Weber Basin and the state.
Okay. So there's not any wiggle room on that.
We can relook at it. And in some cases, Weber Basin has been lenient because they'd rather this be seen as a positive experience, not a punitive. So we can relook at it and get in contact with them. My understanding wants to put a playground in right by your bedroom.
Well, Promontory's talking about putting in a dog park right by the well.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Oh, they haven't talked to you about
that? That would be
source protection. That's wells in the district.
Big no.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, maybe you guys haven't been asked that yet. And then I just want to know what Express IVR is.
That's the automated, instead of a live person, Express Bill Pay, they really don't want to take any phone calls. They want all customers of theirs to use their automated phones, like if you need to make a payment.
Interactive voice response.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All that. Yeah. Did anyone else have any questions on department updates?
Heavier than everyone else's.
Yeah.
I was aiming for that. Yeah.
That's why I spend so much time looking at it.
Mike and I are going to continue this meeting in St. George if anybody wants to come over.
I go and check out the new season of Beef.
Corey, that sounds good. Can you send me your phone number or do you want to just meet somewhere?
With that, would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye, that's unanimous. And we're adjourned at 7:17.